books.
Looking for lists. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to my favorite time of the week. It is book pick time, and very, very nice to have you all here to hear from three wonderful booksellers who have just picked incredible books to share with us that should be on our radar and things that we can be aware of. Wonderful, wonderful books for this season and beyond. Let me introduce the group to you this morning, and we will get started because there's a lot of books on the table, and we have a lot to get to. We welcome Anthony and Amanda Stromsky. Am I saying that right?
Stromsky.
So I'm not saying it right. Anthony and Amanda Stromsky of Rough Draft Bar and Books in Kingston, New York. How nice to have you both here. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
It's really nice to have you. We also welcome Kira Weisner of Merritt Bookstore in Millbrook, New York. And you have your special guest. Hi, Roxy. How are you? What kind of dog is Roxy?
She's a Havanese poodle mix, so she's a Havapoo.
A Havapoo.
Yeah.
And adorable. Absolutely adorable. Those ears are precious.
And very well behaved.
Very well behaved. Very, very well behaved. Well, welcome all. Thank you very much for being with us. Amanda, would you like to start us off?
Sure. The first book that I have chosen is called It's Not the End of the World by Jonathan Parks Ramage. And this book was published on June 3rd from Bloomsbury. And I have to say, this is one of the wildest, most bonkers books I have ever read.
Yes.
But I also could not put it down. Have you read it?
No,
oh, okay.
I haven't. No.
So it starts in California in the year 2044. And it manages to set the scene as both an absurd exaggeration, but at the same time, a terrifyingly believable version of what a dystopian 2044 might be. So there's an authoritarian government that is conducting trials on citizens with, quote, anti-American beliefs. Gay marriage has been outlawed in most states. Cities like Miami and Provincetown are underwater, although you can still visit them if you are rich enough to pay for virtual reality versions. But overall, it's pretty awful for most people. So our two main characters, however, they're a rich gay couple named Mason and Yoon-ho, and they are privileged enough to live in Los Angeles in both a figurative and literal bubble. Mason and Yoon-ho are about to have a baby via a surrogate, and the book opens with Mason running errands all over L.A. in his Tesla, picking up the cake and the flowers and confirming all of the details for their $100,000 baby shower. Like including the man-made rainstorm that they have reserved to clear the nearby wildfire smoke from the property for a few hours. But then a strange pink smog rolls in, and suddenly the book goes from a figurative skewering of rich people to a seriously gory and campy and off-the-wall horror movie. So people start dying, and the world like turns upside down. And from there, the book manages to be hilarious, horrifying, and truly shocking, chapter after chapter. So this book is not for the squeamish, and its societal critiques are definitely not subtle. But it is fascinating and thoroughly entertaining until the very end.
It's not the end of the world. Jonathan Parks, how did you say that, Ramage?
Ramage.
Excellent. That sounds terrific. Anthony, you're up.
All right, my first book is Precipice by Robert Harris. It's from Harper. It came out last year, but there's going to be a paperback this October. And it's timely. If you've seen the recent Best Picture-nominated film Conclave, you have an idea of Robert Harris's skill for political thrillers and historical fiction. He wrote the novel behind that movie, as well as the novel Munich, also an acclaimed film, about the Allies' last-ditch efforts to avoid World War II at a conference in Germany. In Precipice, his most recent book, Harris follows the British Prime Minister H.H. Asquith as he deals with the lead-up to World War I, and along with the obviously massive political challenges for Asquith at this time, he happened to be carrying on an affair with a woman half his age named Venetia Stanley. She herself was a brilliant young member of the British aristocracy. The affair writing her love notes during cabinet meetings, and Harris is able to quote extensively from his actual letters to her, which is awesome. He showed her top secret documents, and he shared notes from other important figures such as Winston Churchill. Some of these confidential papers were even found after being thrown from their curtained limo he shared with Venetia on long country drives. So while he's busy making some of the most momentous decisions in world history, he's also behaving like a schoolboy with a crush. Throw in some spicy spy action and some fantastic hour-by-hour intrigue leading up to war, and you've got an absolute page-turner. But also an eerily relevant novel about a world that feels out of control and on the brink of terrible conflict. All while the politician at the center of things is distracted by personal matters, sharing state secrets, and is not entirely focused on important decisions he needs to make. I don't know if that sounds familiar or not.
No, where do they get this stuff? Precipice is the name of the book. Robert Harris is the author. And Anthony, thank you very much. We go to Kira. Go ahead.
All right. I'm going to go in a different direction. Then I'm going to start with a picture book. This is called The Ordinary Life of Jacquemus Gainsborough by Rebecca Dotremé. And it is a picture book unlike any I have ever seen before. It's one that I think you could buy for an adult just as much as you could buy it for an interested older child. I think this is like a 5, 6, 7-year-old. And it is a birth to death book. So at the end, you actually also see the poor little rabbit at the end of his life, but with this beautiful list of all the things that he has accomplished, which includes like some of the good things and the bad things. But the entire book is illustrated throughout his life with pictures of scenes that happened and then little stills as if they were the pictures or photographs he took or if they were his memories. And he's a thoughtful rabbit. He's involved in wars and in relationships and makes friends and makes some enemies and hurts himself at times and then heals and brings people flowers. And it is extraordinary, actually, which is what the book says it is. But it really is. And so that's what I wanted to start with today.
It is. It's absolutely gorgeous. The art is stunning and really just pops off the page. It's The Ordinary Life of
Jacquemus Gainsborough.
All right. Very good. Those two words were missing on the side of my paper, so I didn't know. I knew it was
the mysterious
The Ordinary
rabbit.
Life of Jaw is what I have. So that's good. Back to you, Amanda.
Okay, so The Catch by Yrsa Daly Ward. This is the first in a brand new series of books selected and co-edited by Glory Edim, founder of the Well-Read Black Girl Book Club, in partnership with LiveRight Publishing. So this is part mystery, part magical realism, part family drama. It follows twin sisters in London who grew up in different adopted families after their mother suddenly disappeared, presumably drowned, when they were children. Now, on the twins' 30th birthday, a woman who looks just like their mother reappears into their lives. But she hasn't aged a day and appears to be living the life she would have had if the twins were never born. Things get weird as the sisters and the reader start to question what is real. And this is Yrsa Daly Ward's first novel. She's also an acclaimed poet, and that really shines through in these eerie, dreamlike scenes that she sets and in the story's unusual structure. So one of the sisters in the book is an author with her own hit new book, and The Catch intersperses sections of that book within its pages, which creates multiple layers of plot that overlap and intertwine in a really unique way.
And actually, we were saying in the green room there, she has written a book called The How, which is, I think, The Extraordinary Act of Meeting Yourself. And it's one of those books we have in our inspiration section that it really... you can give to lots of different people, but it's so meaningful. It's, you know, a very get in touch with yourself book. So it's really nice to see her evolve as a writer.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
The Catch, Yrsa Daly Ward. All right, Anthony.
Okay, Is a River Alive? A new book from Robert McFarlane, Hamish Hamilton, Penguin, and it just came out in May. I am a huge fan of traveler slash nature writer slash word magician Robert McFarlane, and this new book is another beautiful collection of adventures around the world and thoughtful, poetic descriptions of nature and our relationship to it. This book explores bodies of water near his home in Britain, as well as others in India, Ecuador, and Canada. He visits with the people who depend on the water in these places for their lives and their livelihoods, and he dives into the challenges caused by climate change, pollution, overuse, and more. He is in love with words, and if this is your first time reading him, you are in for a treat. Not only does he make you think hard about our world, our places in it, and what we're doing to it, but he does so with such poetic language that you cannot help but be pulled into his world and end up actually learning all kinds of new words at the same time. Is a River Alive is a meditation on our dying rivers, streams, lakes, and springs. And he uses that word dying literally here because he believes bodies of water are truly living beings. And he makes a plea for humanity to consider saving them and leaves us with just enough hope in the end to go on caring and trying.
The name of the book is A River Alive by Robert McFarlane. He is scheduled to be on the show. We had to bump him, but he will be here, and we look forward to having him on the program. Kira, you're next.
All right, so I brought Parallel Lines by Edward St. Aubin. He wrote Patrick Melrose novels. This book is published by Knopf. I feel like I should add that in now. Every single word is necessary in this book. There's sometimes where writers kind of go on or, you know, just get a point across in a way that is totally fine. As I was reading this book, I slowed myself down, like, constantly. He does this really interesting thing where he repeats words and he talks about the outside things that the character's seeing and then the inside things that they're feeling, but in that way where you feel like he's getting in your head. And this idea of parallel lines in the story is it starts with this character, Sebastian, who definitely has some complications. He's in a mental institution, and it just gets so involved in his life, and then it passes to another character and to another character, and then eventually you begin to see how they're all connected. And it's fascinating.
The name of the it's really very cool. The name of the book is Parallel Lines. Okay, Amanda.
So my next book is It's Only Drowning, A True Story of Learning to Surf and the Search for Common Ground by David Litt. So I was not originally going to talk about this book because I thought the subject matter was so niche that it might not appeal to somebody who didn't A, grow up in New Jersey, or B, have at least a minor obsession with surfing, both of which describe me. My girlfriends and I go to a surf camp every year, or we try to, but being that I only surf for 1 week a year and live in the Hudson Valley, I'm like a perpetual beginner. But I actually heard Cheryl McKeon from the Bookhouse recommend it on this show last week.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Specifically because she was not a surfer and has nothing to do with surfing or the ocean, and she still enjoyed it. So I would like to second her recommendation for this book, which comes out today by Gallery Books.
David Litt, It's Only Drowning. I bet you could talk Cheryl into going with you. Yeah, she seems like she's up for that. I think that'd be great. All right. It's Only Drowning by David Litt. Anthony.
Okay. My next book is You Dreamed of Empires by Alvaro Enrique. It's from Riverhead, and it is not a new book, but it's one that I'm handing out weekly at the shop for people to buy because it is so much fun. It turns on its head all of the standard history that I learned in school about Cortez and the Spanish meeting Montezuma and the Aztecs. I remember learning that the European explorers were viewed as gods by the, quote, naive natives, unquote, and the superior firepower of the more advanced Spanish allowed them to overrun the Aztecs. But the reality is so much more complex and interesting. And Enrique tells the story from the Aztec or Mexica point of view, giving them agency, personalities, plans, and dignity. He introduces us to important women in the story, makes clear that they were a huge part of what took place when these two civilizations met. He brings to life all the colors and the smells and the feathers and the pyramids and the gold and the language. It's cool. He introduces us to a host of Nahuatl terms and names, and also the wonder of just the absolute wonder of this floating city that the Mexica had built. And he also throws in some psychedelic mushrooms and other trippy details for good measure.
All right.
Yeah, it's the perfect time to read about what happens when one people attempts to dominate another, when they feel superior and are driven by fear or ambition or greed. And it doesn't hurt to read deep history, especially right now, even in fiction, about Europe, colonization, and the origins of modern Mexico.
The name of the book is You Dreamed of Empires. All right. Kira Wisner.
All right. So here's another novel.
How's Roxy doing?
She's great.
All right. Oh, she's awake.
Yeah.
Oh, unlike most of the audience. She's good. Excellent.
I'm going to, especially now, I'm going to.
Cheap shot. Sorry.
That's okay, because now I'm going
to
talk
directed
about.
Directed to myself.
A book about snails.
Oh, good. Oh, there. Well, then.
Are you sure, everybody?
Wake up. Slow wake down. Up, Roxy. Get ready. It's a snail book.
This is a book by Maria Riva. It's called Endling. And actually, it could be Reva. And so I apologize, Maria, if you're listening. But it is a book about a woman in Ukraine. And it is balancing out women who are brides for the tourism that goes on with men who come from other countries to meet Ukrainian women. And they go on dates. And some, you know, the goal is marriage, but it doesn't necessarily always happen. And so one of the women is being a bride. She's doing this work because she gets paid, and she has a snail trailer that she is trying to rescue and keep certain breeds of snails that are like on the verge of extinction. And she, I know.
Well, no, it was a snail trailer that got me.
I was just like, picturing a huge snail following
right,
behind.
It's like a, yeah. Oh, like an airstream, but
an
not,
RV,
not quite as cool. An
but,
RV,
but would have
retrofitted as a mobile
snail lab. All right, got it.
And she meets up with another character who is a kind of brilliant character. She's also one of the brides, but she grew up with a mother who was always protesting this industry. And the mother has since kind of left to, we're not quite sure where she is, and the daughter has taken on and decided to become this thing that her mother protested against. And the sister is one of the translators. But they connect with the other character who runs the snail lab, who's also a bride, and their goal is to kidnap some of the men to then prove like how bad this situation is. All of a sudden, then the Russia attacks Ukraine, the war breaks out, and Maria is playing with form and story as much as she's telling the story. So at some point then we begin to hear from the author as the author, and then we're back to the story, and it keeps you on your toes and interesting and interesting. It reminded me a little bit, both books actually that I brought reminded me a little bit of Welcome to the Goon Squad, like that feeling where you're reading something that is not exactly what you read before.
Endling is the name of the book by Maria Riva, and now out. All right, Amanda.
So the next book is Last Room on the Left by Leah Conan. This came out in January, published by Putnam, but I picked it up recently because it will be one of our featured readings in July for our night school reading series at Rough Draft. So if you're a fan of psychological thrillers and you live in the Hudson Valley or the Catskills, this is probably a book that you'll devour in just a couple days. It's about a New York City author who's facing writer's block and an impending divorce, and she takes a job as the winter caretaker at a recently renovated Catskills motel. So, you know the type. They're like isolated, no frills, but they're dressed up. They're dressed up for Instagram tourism. Her plan is to take a digital detox and finally write the book that she's promised her editor. But when she arrives, she finds her room in shambles and a dead body in the snow outside. The body disappears, and everyone starts to question whether the new caretaker really saw what she saw. Of course, there's a blizzard, and our unreliable narrator finds herself trapped with nobody but the cranky locals and a murderer on the loose fighting for her sanity and her life. So it's a fast and twisty and fun read, but I think being in the hospitality industry in the Hudson Valley made this book especially relatable and enjoyable. And you can hear Leah read from it on July 15th at Rough Draft's next session of Night School.
Nice plug.
July, excellent. Very well. July 15th is the day for that event, and it's Leah Conan, author of The Last Room on the Left. Anthony.
Okay, This Is How You Lose the Time War by Amal El-Motar and Max Gladstone. Again, not a new book. This came out in 2019 from Simon & Schuster, but there's a deluxe edition coming out in the fall, and I heartily recommend it because this is the most striking novel about falling in love that I have ever read. It's an award-winning, queer, epistolary science fiction story that takes place across an infinite number of places and times, with two warriors able to jump through time and space, each leading universe-level armies against the other. They strike up a tentative relationship through little notes that they leave for each other, which develops over time from taunts and threats into a deep, passionate, eternal love. And what makes this relationship so unique is that it develops almost exclusively through words. Two people falling in love from scratch, each having barely ever seen the other, feeling wonder at each other's abilities, and even saving each other's lives. It's just gorgeous writing. And because it's written by two authors with distinct voices and perspectives, it just has the most real feeling fall into love that I have ever read. It feels like it could happen anywhere or anytime. No space travel or space or time travel necessary.
This Is How You Lose the Time War. All right. Kara, we've got about 2 minutes.
All right. I'm actually going to combine these two. So
okay.
This is a book called Welcome to Murder Week by Karen Duques, which is a novel. It starts out with a woman who was supposed to go on like a murder fun vacation with her mom to England, where they get to uncover and solve a murder, like to play at that. And then the mom dies and she winds up going and taking a friend and kind of sort of things both are solved, and it's really fun. It's about her getting to know herself and her relationship with her mom and all of those things. And I'm pairing it with this really great graphic called Mama Needs a Minute, which is by Mary Catherine Starr. And it's just like a lot of real moments of motherhood. But when you see them on the pages and you see that other people have the same ones and you think about it, it both gives you an opportunity to kind of sort of laugh with her, laugh at her, laugh at yourself, just relax a little bit. And I don't know, both of those books really kind of are a lot of fun.
Mama Needs a Minute by Mary Catherine Starr. And the other one was Welcome to Murder Week by Karen Duques?
Duques, yeah.
Duques. Excellent. Kara has many more books on her list.
Yeah, we bought a bunch of paperbacks, and we were all talking about that. There's such great paperbacks out now. Safekeep, Art Thief.
Ministry of Time.
Sandwich,
Northwoods. Yeah, good stuff. Art Thief, I love. Safekeep, right. So good stuff. The whole list is on our website, and you can find it there. All you have to do is go to wamc.org/roundtable. wamc.org/roundtable. All the book picks list posted there. You can also go to the individual stores. They want to see you. Visit them in Kingston and in Millbrook. They would love to have you there. Anthony and Amanda from Rough Draft and Kira from Merit, thank you all for being here. What a delight.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So wonderful to have you all here. Roxy, you're great. Thank you. Good to see you. You just don't.
She's just happy right here.
That's right. That's life. That's good. Keep cool.
The AC is good
what you
in
need
here.
To do it. Yeah, it is. Absolutely. Once again, wamc.org/roundtable. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.